flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
Hello, mate.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was Christmas I was last here.
Was it Christmas?
Yeah, yeah.
We're feeling festive.
There's lots of good food here.
You've got jams and pickles and preserves and meats and beer and all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going to have a feast now.
God, Allah, Buddha, bless Mill Road. Mill Road is awesome.
You could taste chocolate forever, like really good chocolate.
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful.
Gingerbread men of all shapes and sizes.
Whoa, that's fizzy. Yeah, that takes your head off.
And the food is great, and the wine is obviously fantastic.
Doesn't that look lovely?
We had music all day. I did pancakes all day.
Holly, Tiny Robins.
At the end of the night, we all eat together with the staff.
I love this place. It's unique in Cambridge.
You've got people and you've got food, and that's all you need, and conversation springs forth.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Alan Alder, Sue Bailey and me, Matt Bentman. We've our usual busy programme of food and news stories for Cambridge and the surrounding area. And one of our stories today, Alan and I have been finding out what effect the cancellation of the Mill Road Winter Fair has had on local traders.
I also caught up with Hannah Hoskins, who's recently moved back to Cambridge from Washington, D.C., and she's brought her home bakery business with her. So I've been finding out from Hannah what she's baking, how our tastes here in Cambridge differ from those she's been previously catering for, and about the full-time six-month pastry course she went on in New York.
There's also news about Steak & Honour's new venture that's opening in Mill Road.
And we'll be hearing what some chefs, foodies, and members of the public will be eating for their Christmas dinner.
And we'll have our regular features too. Free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our Drobs Roundup. So, let's begin.
Mill Road Winter Fair has been an annual event since 2006, with lots of bands, street food, events, and shops setting up stalls selling lots of hot food in the cold. The street gets packed to the gills with visitors, and there's always things going on for the majority of the Mill Road mile. The fair stopped for COVID, and it stopped this year too. On Thursday the 5th of December, the Mill Road Winter Fair Association were forced to cancel this year's event due to Storm Dara.
Good morning. As Storm Dara hits, many of us will have a wet and very windy day. And in some places, those winds are dangerous.
Lots of heavy rain across eastern parts of England, some flooding likely in places here.
Every single step I take, it feels as if a wall of force is pushing me back.
With red warnings in place around the country, yellow warnings in the east and threats of 60-mile-an-hour winds or more in Cambridge. Shops up and down Mill Road were alerted to cancel their plans at the 11th hour. But with all that extra purchased food going to waste, had the damage been done before the wind had even blown its first gale?
You only need one gazebo flying down the road towards a family and you go, why on earth did you go ahead with this event?
Paul Gilliland, community liaison for the Mill Road Winter Fair, speaking to Cambridge Radio the day the fair was cancelled.
I really feel for a lot of the people that take part in the fair, because at the end of the day, Mill Road Winter Fair is about showcasing Mill Road.
And for a programme like ours, Mill Road means lots of independent food shops, and the Winter Fair is their red letter day, like Mill Road Butchers.
We found out the evening we finished making 2,000 sausages, it would have been nicer to know earlier, but it happened when it did.
Urban Larder Cafe.
Typically, because there's so many people, it's a big, big day for profits and revenue.
And Cafe Blue Sage.
Normally, the winter fair our busiest day. After cancellation, we had a normal Saturday. It's like this, yeah.
For some independents, winter can be a low season, and the Mill Road Winter Fair can be an opportunity to collect a month's earnings in a day. So, it's reasonable to bring in extra stock.
I think it was about 3 extra bodies of each animal that we would break down, just to account for the extra trade we would see.
So they bought over 250 Turkish pizza from London, and they paid it already.
Here's Botany Foodie, a Turkish cafe just over the bridge on the Romsey side.
I feel sorry for my friends, nearly £10,000, and it's gone. For the small business owner, it's a big money, you know?
At the top of Mill Road, Finboy's Seafood Restaurant.
Richard, the closure of the winter fair, did it affect you badly?
Well, it certainly left a hole in our accounts of a number of £1,000, you know, which is particularly tough being a seafood restaurant that we're going to be closed over the Christmas New Year period because no day boats go out.
And at Relevant Cafe and Bar.
We got cookies that we had 300, mulled wine, hot chocolate, and loads of Turkish pastries. And we spent over £4,000. And we bought lots of equipment for outside. And we don't know like how to get it back, to be honest.
Lutayo Music Cafe and Restaurant specialises in Japanese food. Certain dishes require a lot of preparation.
Yeah, basically, we need to spend more than a month to prepare 4,800 pieces. Yeah, you can't suddenly cancel, but if put in the bin, it's very waste.
Like their gyoza dumplings.
It's their best day of the year.
That could easily become the worst.
We lost a lot because at the end, we only sell 500 dumplings.
4,800 ordered, 500 sold.
We don't want to waste that.
They're in the freezer, but they can't stay in there more than a month.
And we tried just thinking another sale or something.
And this was pretty much the story up and down Mill Road.
I sold a lot, even dropped the prices and everything. But I am sure if it was a winter fair, probably just gone, like straight away, you know?
It didn't really help that the boss spent about £4,000 on barbecue equipment, which he couldn't use this year, sadly. We sort of put everything into this Saturday.
We went to London and bought lots of feta cheese.
Yes, we have bought a lot of stuff like Turkish delights mainly, and we made a really good deals, especially for Christmas as well. But unfortunately, people have missed out.
Filo pastries, a sujuk, malt punch, chocolates.
X amount of rolls, X amount of onions, sausages, etc., to try and cater for their day.
At least nothing happened to the people, you know, because it was really windy.
But this is where the story takes a little turn, because people still came in reasonable numbers to Mill Road.
We were lucky enough to be quite busy yesterday when the fair was supposed to be. I think, in a way, the late cancellation helped us almost, because not a lot of people heard about it.
And a half of the people, they didn't even know it's been cancelled. Yeah. You know, because it's just like, last minute.
But the community also came together. A lot of the neighbourhood WhatsApp groups did tell each other to get down to the local food places, which helped us sell a lot of our sausages as well.
I imagine that some shopkeepers, they must have ordered an extra stock and all of that kind of thing. So do try and support the Mill Road shopkeepers. It's a bit of a nightmare, really.
Now, nothing's happening that's to do with the fair. You know, if you can bear the weather on Saturday, try and get along just like it was a normal day. And look, Mill Road's still there.
I think they hear the news and they just feel, oh, you must be very upset because they're a very regular customer. They just come to see me and have dinner and show them, yeah, a lot of people support you, even make, you know, less upset, yeah.
Yeah, we had a really, really busy day. And I suspect maybe it's because people were already prepared to come out for that day. So it definitely alleviated what could have been potentially a pretty dour day.
It was really busy. I don't think much people knew that it was cancelled.
We're so, so thankful for everyone that did put a word out and really help us get through it. Otherwise, we would have been very, very far down this week, but we've managed to recuperate as much as we could.
Social media saved the butcher's bacon. And with the help of the Mill Road Traders Association, shops were able to trade their excess with other shops.
You know, every shop is trying to support each other. Yeah, we did have other shops come for buy the dumpling. Also, we did buy chocolate drinks from other shops.
Whilst others, like Finboy's restaurant, were able to return certain items rather than hold them.
We managed to get all the oysters sent back. There are certain things we had to keep. So we're carrying more stock than we normally would by about £800 or £900, but it's stuff that we can use in the future.
This is quite spiriting because I was expecting to go up and down the street today hearing lots of sad comments from people, but so far it doesn't seem to have been so bad. People have been able to weather the storm.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the people are there, they're trying to be very supportive. That was the lovely part.
But I agree with this decision because weather wasn't good. It's rain and wind.
You know, we've got marquees, we've got gazebo, some of the stall holders, their stuff would have just blown away. That's what's done for us, is heavy rain plus wind.
My opinion, if you open the stall in outside this time, the anxiety make me ill because I'm worried about the staff and other people's.
Do you think people will be more cautious next year about ordering?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, it's a winter fair and we shouldn't expect bad weather. I mean, unfortunately, the bad weather didn't arrive until an hour or so after the fair would have finished. You know, we got the bad weather about 5 or 6 o'clock time. So it wouldn't have caused a problem in the end. But I understand things have to be organised a couple of days in advance and no one's, you know, people knew there was going to be a storm, but obviously they got the timings wrong by 8 or 9 hours, which is unfortunate. But, you know, that call had to be made by somebody and I'm sure they didn't want to do it. But say, that's life.
What's great about Mill Road is just the diversity and the variety. That's what Mill Road Winter Fair originally started out as. And that's still there, whether the fair has been cancelled or not.
Yeah, Julia from Emerald Foods on Cambridge Market said when I was there on Wednesday that they managed to set up at the market last Saturday and they were busier than they expected, partly because of people coming into Cambridge to go to the winter fair, not realising that it had been cancelled. So they went to the market instead, so it is an ill wind.
Yes.
But it did make me think that one of the benefits of the heavy, non-dismountable market stalls that are used in the market square at the moment is that they don't blow away. There's no danger. And if this proposal to have most of them replaced with lighter stalls that can be taken apart and moved goes ahead, I wonder if anyone's thought about how the design will stand up to high winds. Who knows?
I'm free. I'm free.
Now, here's where you can get some free food in and around Cambridge. Matt has been looking at the Olio app this morning to see what's available. The Olio app is free and well worth using because it helps to reduce food waste.
That's right. And the first thing you'll see when you open the Olio app today is the announcement that they have officially saved over 1 million meals from going to waste. That's quite a milestone to achieve. And in that spirit, we've got Ivy in King's Hedges. She's got a jar of Muti vegan bolognese to give away. Eugenie on Babraham Road is on bread duty this time. She's got brown scotch rolls, 4 loaves of Warburton's toast bread, ice finger buns and yum-yums, and packs of milk chocolate and custard-filled donuts, and lots of croissants and pecan danishes available. Meanwhile, Al in Brackley Close, which is just off Arbury Road, has a small jar of kefir grain, which it looks like cottage cheese in the photo. Now, Al says that this will make 500 mils of kefir and it will grow in time, so it's good stuff. And finally, we've got Olivia in St Barnabas Court off Mill Road, who is giving away packs of dried figs and dried dates. Not a bad selection. And of course, that's just what's available in a snapshot taken right now on the Olio app. It's a constant conveyor belt of interesting things, and they're all free.
Very good. And also, they're available outside Cambridge as well.
This is a
national app.
True, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, there's another app called Too Good To Go, which has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price. And again, it's to reduce food waste. But instead of specifying what each unsold item is going to be, the surplus food is simply put into a magic bag ready for you to take home. And again, that saves it from being binned at the end of the day's trading. And some of the companies that have used it recently include Greggs in Cherry Hinton, Novi, Namaste, Pret, Upper Crust, Marks and Spencer at the station, Spar in Chesterton and in Sawston, the Co-op in Sawston, Marks and Spencer's at Addenbrookes Hospital, Barrington Village Stores, Budgeons in Arbury, and the Clayton Hotel and the Ibis Hotel by the station, and so on. We could fill the programme with the complete list, but let's not.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Well, on to our first news break now. Brewboard's taproom in Pease Hill by the Arts Theatre is open, as we reported last time. And here's Clarissa from Brewboard with information about the dates it will be open and news of a couple of special nights.
We are here till January 1st. We will be open through December 24th and then we'll be having a New Year's Eve party.
How late on New Year's Eve? Till midnight, yeah. Presumably.
Yes.
But you've also got a vinyl night.
Yeah, so next Thursday, the 19th of December, we've got a vinyl night where you can come in, bring your three favourite vinyls, your name will go up on the chalkboard, and when your name gets to the top, it's your time to throw on your vinyls and watch everyone appreciate the music that you've picked.
And what about between Christmas and New Year?
We are closed between Christmas and New Year.
Thank you, Clarissa.
Thank you.
And news about Burren now, the restaurant being opened by the Steak and Honour team, and that's in the Sea Trees old premises on Mill Roads, Broadway. They hope to open in January or early in February, and Burren will be a neighbourhood restaurant. Burren is Dutch for neighbour. It won't be a branch of Steak and Honour. It will have a much more extensive menu, though you will still be able to get a burger, and it will have some good wines and beers, and we're looking forward to it.
Great. So, news about today now. If you are listening live, you've got until 3 p.m. to get to the Shelford Deli Christmas Market, which has lots of artisan foods available.
And today and tomorrow, the Farmer's Outlet Shop on Lensfield Road is open, selling Christmas trees, bulbs and some plants too.
Simon Steele of Mayfield Produce's vegetable stall on Cambridge, Ely and St Ives Markets has announced its dates for the Christmas and New Year period. Simon will be at St Ives Market on the 21st of December and the 4th of January, Cambridge Market on the 15th, 22nd and 29th of December, and at Ely Market today, the 14th of December and the 23rd of December, which is a Monday. And we'll have more news later.
Okay. Now, on the subject of Christmas, it's time to find out what some members of the public are having for their Christmas dinner.
Poulet fusée. It's my favourite.
I'll be having beef and cockerel for Christmas dinner. None of us like turkey, and a chicken isn't big enough, so a cockerel goes down quite well. It's a little bit richer than chicken, but like I said, it's a bigger bird.
For my Christmas dinner, I normally have pork, turkey, homemade sausage meat stuffing, parsnips, and all the veg, and then obviously in the morning, the next day on Boxing Day, some bob and squeak.
So it's like the traditional in Lithuania to have like 12 dishes with different salads, with the fish one, with the bread, some drinks as well. So basically before the Christmas, let's say 1 or 2 days, we don't eat the meat. And when it's the Christmas coming, so we're allowed to meet. Yeah.
It will be something white and fizzy for Christmas dinner and red in the evening and afternoon, yeah.
We're going to my parents, yeah. And they're doing turkey, roast potatoes, red cabbage, pigs in blankets, stuffing, the classics, and bread sauce, cranberry sauce, Brussels sprouts.
For a Christmas dinner, we serve as a Polish tradition fish carp.
I'm from Venezuela. For the Christmas, we made traditional pork with raisins, wine, and it's so good. And we made the bread with jam, with raisins. Our food is really, really tasty because we made with exciting ingredients like coriander, onion, like garlic.
The traditional turkey, sprouts, and roast potatoes, hopefully, yeah. Everybody seems to buy the traditional things, even if they don't like them, which is bizarre. I have people come up here and say, we'll have some sprouts. We don't like them, but we'll have some because it's traditional.
I'm from Taiwan, and in my country, we don't celebrate Christmas. So normally we just like having dinner as usual.
We are going to have turkey, lots of mezes with our family all together.
Our culture is influenced by Western countries a lot. So nowadays in Taiwan, we will have a lot of Christmas stuff like decorations. People will hang out together, but it's still not like a big festival during a whole year.
We're Venezuelan of origin. So for Christmas, we have pretty unconventional dishes. We have hallacas, which is like, I don't know how to describe it, but they're nice. And we also have a ham bread, which is like a very nice pastry. And then now that my sister and I have been in England for so long, we combine it with an English breakfast and have a weird amalgamation of it, yeah.
Hiya, good afternoon. My name is John. I'm from Romania. And for Christmas dinner, I have like sarmale. It's like pork mince with rice and cabbage. The cabbage, before to do that, it needs to stay in water and the salt for a couple of months and can put in the oven for 2 hours. And after with milk cream on top. It's absolutely delicious, definitely.
Fascinating responses, and we'll hear from more people later.
Cambridge is blessed with a good number of bakeries, either baking in commercial premises like Fitzbillies and Stir, or in small shops like the Cambridge Oven and Maison Clément, and in people's home kitchens too. So, is there space for another? Well, if the bakery is run by a local person who's been home baking for the people of Washington, D.C. before moving back to Cambridge and has done a full-time six-month pastry course in New York, the answer must be yes. The bakery is Monroe Street Bakery, after the road in Washington, D.C. in which it originated, and the baker is Hannah Hoskins, and I spoke to Hannah about it earlier in the week. Hannah, you've got a home baking business here in Cambridge, yeah. And you've moved it from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was quite a move. And the hardest thing is I had it really quite going well in D.C. I had a good customer base, so just picking that up again has been a challenge, and adjusting to British customers and British marketing rather than the American way of doing things.
Right.
It takes a bit of getting used to.
So what's different then?
Well, where we were in DC, it was a great place, but there weren't that many bakeries. There was a real lack of good baked goods. So in a way, it was pretty straightforward to get people coming to me. There was one website everyone followed. I got a post on there, and from there, it was kind of plain sailing. Here, there's definitely a bit more competition, healthy competition.
There's a lot of bakeries in Cambridge. I think it's quite unusual, actually.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky. But it also makes it a bit more tricky to find my niche in a way. So yeah, I'm just trying to slowly get the word out and just adjust to how people want things. In America, it was a lot of big birthday cakes. They do birthdays in a big way over there, lots of big parties. Whereas here, I'm finding so far it's more, can you do a dessert for my dinner party on Saturday? Or can I have something for my kids' party? That kind of thing, rather than grown-ups having 10-inch sprinkle cakes for their 53rd or whatever it is.
And I was wondering, is there any difference in what people like, you know, in taste?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's DC is a bit of a bubble in that it is very international, at least where we were, so it's not a, like, true American test. They definitely do have a sweeter tooth, and everything is bigger, and they will over-cater very happily. Here, well, I'm straight back into Christmas, so I'm back into mince pies and Christmas cakes for the first time in many years, because I just didn't even try that on them over there.
They don't have mince pies?
No mince pies. They have no idea what that is. Traditional Christmas cake, no, not at all. They would do like a Christmas log or a bûche de Noël, so a more chocolatey dessert, but they wouldn't really do a traditional, you know, the rich, fruity stuff that we do here. That's not a thing for them. I don't know, generally, I guess I have my own style, which I kind of inflict upon people, which has become a bit of a blend of the two. So, yeah, I kind of tried to do a bit more British influence over there and probably bring a bit more American influence over here.
Well, I was looking at some of the things that you do, and I was wondering what a Mexican wedding cake was.
A Mexican wedding cookie.
Oh, yeah, wedding cookie.
They're a little walnut. They're like a tiny buttery shortbread, and they're really filled with nuts and sugar. And you dust them with icing sugar when they're still hot, so it has that kind of melted, vanilla-y, nutty flavour. I'll bring you some next time.
And what's popular?
At the moment, the little biscuit boxes that I'm doing for the Christmas holidays are popular, so that's just a mix of shortbreads and macaroons and things that will last. Apart from that, the chocolate praline cake I do is always popular. I'm not a particular chocolate person, but I always end up making this chocolate cake a lot, so it's just a stacked birthday cake, chocolate cake, with a chocolate mousse and praline and caramel in the middle and chocolate frosting. It's really like a Bruce Bogtrotter situation.
And once we're out of the Christmas period, what sort of things will you be doing then?
So I always have on my website available like a steady state of things, various birthday cakes, and I'm always happy to take custom orders for, I'm doing a tiramisu for someone this weekend, for example, so stuff like that I'm always happy to do. And then, yeah, cookies, kids' birthday stuff, breakfast things I love doing, but I know there is Maison Clément right around the corner, like American-style scones. Got some scones on there which are not a traditional British scone for sure.
Oh, aren't they? In what way?
They are not fulfilling with cream and jam. In the States, you have them with your coffee, just a little buttery, flaky treat in the morning, yeah.
So they don't have sultanas or colours,
no,
or whatever?
Yeah, so the ones I'm doing at the moment, I think I have a cranberry and orange one up and a double chocolate one, so
right.
Yeah.
I'm going back from...
Also happy to make a regular scone whenever anyone wants.
Right, so you do requests, then.
Yeah, I do requests. I take requests, basically, yeah.
Right, and I noticed that you do granola as well.
Yeah, that's always popular. I mean, I get through a lot of that at home. It's just full of whatever things we want to put in. I've been using honey that my father-in-law makes to bake it with from his bees. And, yeah, it's just a great snack or a really good breakfast.
Yeah, it is. I agree. And I noticed that you've been to an international culinary centre in New York. What was that like?
Oh,
I imagine
so
it was very
fun.
Intense.
It was intense, but so much fun. So I had been working in food marketing and writing since I graduated, basically, but kind of knew I always actually wanted to be in the kitchen. So finally pulled the plug and went to culinary school. And, yeah, it was 6 months full-time pastry making. So, yeah, it was really intense. I had a really small class. There was just three of us. So we got a lot of attention. And, yeah, you start off doing pretty basic biscuits and cookies, and by the end you're building sugar sculptures and doing all sorts of nonsense that I'll probably never do again, but it was pretty fun to do at the time.
Gosh, 6 months full-time.
Yeah, it was fun.
You must know a lot.
I did at the time. It was a lot. Yeah, they fit in a lot of exams and they seem to make it as stressful as possible, really. But I guess they're trying to imitate kitchen life. But no, it was a lot of fun. Sadly, that place actually closed in COVID. It had been going for so long. But yeah, it was a real like French-based culinary education.
So
yeah.
If you ever wanted the job as a pastry chef, you're well...
I would hope I could, yeah. I would hope I could interview my way into that.
I think you might have people calling on you, actually. There's always vacancies for pastry chefs in Cambridge.
It's a tough job.
Right. And are there... any issues with ingredients? How do you find getting ingredients compared with in the States?
To be honest, compared to the States, here is a lot easier. So far, I'm still enjoying the ease of that. And the quality of stuff here is much higher.
In what way?
Like the butter here. The butter here is yellow. The butter in the States is white. And like the actual fat content of the butter over there is lower. And
So the flavour's not as strong?
The flavour's not as strong, yeah. Eggs are generally better here, and you can get really beautiful eggs, obviously. It's harder to do that in the States. The supermarkets there, there are good suppliers, but the supermarket quality of stuff is generally pretty low. So at the moment, I'm just, enjoying the slightly better quality over here, but I'm sure I will become complacent with that soon as well.
What about bought-in chocolate? What's the quality here?
Here it's better. I mean, you have to be careful what you buy, obviously, but, I mean, over there you're spending a lot of money to get European-style chocolate rather than the American-style. I don't know how much Hershey's chocolate you've ever eaten, but generally to British people it tastes so sick. It has this slight tang to it, and it's just very, very sweet, whereas the chocolate here, if you do seek it out, you can get really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, Hershey bars are a love-hate thing.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people actually don't like them.
Yeah, so yeah, that's your general standard over there, so...
Yeah. And I know you've been at Burwash Manor. Did that go all right?
Yeah, I did the Christmas market there. It was fun. It's my first taste of Christmas markets. It's just nice to meet people and talk to people doing it from home. I do get to meet the customers, but you do miss out on that day-to-day interface with other people, so it was really nice to meet people and talk to people about what they're looking for or what they like or what they want.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of markets in and around
so
Cambridge.
Many I wasn't quick enough on it this year to really
but that's something
most,
you might look at for the future.
I think next year I'll try and be a bit more on the ball with that, because I think people, the other makers I met there, they seem to really love doing them. So,
how do people contact you?
So I'm got a website, Monroe Street ST bakery.co.uk, and on Instagram at Monroe's ST bakery, and shoot me an email. You can find me through the website, And yeah, I'm based in Newnham, but happy to work around anyone in the Cambridge area.
Right, good. Okay, well, it's very nice to meet you, Hannah.
You too.
And good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you.
And Hannah's parents ran the Old Bridge Hotel in Huntingdon until a couple of years ago, which I thought was interesting. A very good place to eat, very highly regarded. And her dad is a master of wine as well. Did you ever eat there, Sue?
Yes, I did a few times, certainly with my mother. And wine choice, excellent. That's always been known.
Yeah, it was an excellent place, yeah. If you want to see what Hannah is baking and order something, go to the Munro Street, Munro ST website. Have you been looking at it, Sue, Matt?
Yeah. Do you want to go first, Sue?
Yeah, I will indeed. I mean, wow, there's an amazing selection there. The most gorgeous looking cakes, bakes, and I'm most impressed by what she's doing. And it was fascinating to hear, particularly about butter differences.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
What did you think of it, Matt?
I think my top choice from her list would be the coconut and cherry granola. Not just because of the song, you know, Crunchy Granola Sweet by...
Is that Neil Diamond?
Neil Diamond, yeah.
Gosh, you two are clever. I'm not sure I like coconut in cakes. So I've never really liked it. Oh. I like mine very fresh.
Well, we won't buy you any, then.
No, don't, please.
Okay, we're off for a two-minute break now, during which time we're going to eat some of Hannah's pan forte. So we'll see you on the other side when we'll get ideas from Rosie Sykes about what to do with the leftovers. We'll meet Kirsten Horn of Gwydir Street Supper Club, hear from some wine food matching experts, and some more local people about what they'll be having at Christmas. Don't go away.
Thursday evenings on Cambridge Radio. We saddle up the horses and head out to O'Reilly Country. Brian O'Reilly has 2 hours of country, western and Americana.
Wonderful new songs about at the moment. We'll do our best to get as many as in as we can each and every Thursday night.
O'Reilly Country on air Thursdays at 7 and anytime at cambridge.radio.
Well, hello. It's not easy being a cat. The servants have gone away again, but this time they've brought in the Fulborn Cat Sitting Company. They are attending to my every need, and it's far less stressful than having to move in with other cats for the week. Meals are all at the regular times, and the bowl has never been so clean. The Fulborn Cat Sitting Company even take care of the meds. Well, I am getting on a bit. I'm hoping they'll stay on. Meow. Find them at thefullborncatsittingcompany.co.uk.
Fancy some mouth-watering fish and chips? Yeah, me too. At Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington, they've got them straight out of the fryer. Or how about a charcoal grilled kebab? The lamb's delicious. Gourmet burgers, chicken strips, spicy wings, it's all at Rumble's. And veggie options too. Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington, 2 to 3 Anstey Way, Trumpington, opposite the Shell Garage. Open Monday to Saturday from 11 to 9.30 and Sundays from 1 to 9. Or order online with Deliveroo. Just search Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington.
Want a podcast for your daily cycle?
Download the Radio Player app and search Cambridge Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. The pan forte was delicious. Yeah,
I'm still busy eating it. It's really interesting. Really interesting.
Anyway, time for a bit more news now. Bread, pastries, mince pies, coffees, teas and beers can be ordered from North Stow Tap and Social for collection on Christmas Eve, and you can pick up an order form from the coffee shop team.
And last orders from Finboy's Festive Hamper is midday the 17th of December. Pickup is only on the 23rd of December between 9 and 5pm.
Modigliani's Christmas order deadline is Friday the 20th of December, and the last time for pickup will be Christmas Eve at 1:45.
Emerald Foods on Cambridge Market has announced some additional days. They'll be there Monday to Saturday for the next 2 weeks, and they're open on Christmas Eve too. Their holiday closure is going to be from the 7th to the 23rd of January.
Biscotti de Deborah has all the orders her team can cope with, so she isn't able to take any more this month. And the bakery won't be able to open on Saturday this month either, because of pressure of work. However, normality will resume at some point in January.
And finally, Midsummer House is having an extra day's opening for dinner. That's on the 17th of December. And that is the news for now. We'll have more later.
And let's find out what some more members of the public are eating this Christmas.
Fox in the snow, where do you go to find something you could eat?
a vegan Wellington with a mushroom walnut and vegan sausage stuffing, some salad, roast vegetables, and a vegan cheese board, which I ordered from a local business. Yeah.
So we have some types of salads. One of them is olivier with potatoes and chicken and many other vegetables. That is a traditional Christmas and New Year salad. Also Russian dumplings, the best dumplings in the world. Russian pirashki, these are really nice pies filled with meat, vegetables, and sweet as well, sweet pies as well. On New Year's and Christmas, I would usually have caviar with bread and butter.
Caviar?
Yeah. Also, we love in Eastern Europe honey cake. Honey cake, nice and soft and sweet.
I love to have a Christmas dinner.
What's your favourite thing about Christmas dinner?
I don't know.
Edit that one out. Very likely we will mix a combination of some vegetarian, a good mix of varieties. Professor Tim's breakfast talked about food balancing, so you need a good variety of salads, combined herbs, nuts. And what we do is combine that with some bits of chicken, some small bits of organic chicken, combine the two together and come up with that for Christmas dinner. Thank you. Happy New Year.
We're having traditional goose, as we do every year. And then we've got my mother and father-in-law around, so we're having to cook a little bit of beef as well.
I'm from Hong Kong, so I will cook a traditional Hong Kong fusion. Maybe steam the meat, rice, cooking rice, and then cooking the mushroom with the fish, steamed fish, like that.
So there's another dish very famous, and it is difficult to make. It's Russian pork aspik holodets or studen. Holodets is a delicacy of jellied meat dish. To cook it, you need to prepare one day before. And to keep it in the fridge so it becomes like a jelly that is delicious, one of the best Russian and Eastern European dish for Christmas and New Year.
So I'm going to the White Horse in Water Beach for a Christmas dinner.
Okay, I think Mum's cooking roast beef with roasted vegetables and some gravy. That's all I think. And then we're going to have a nice Christmas pudding at the end for the dessert. Some chocolates and maybe a cheese board as well. Thank you.
And some Russian pryaniki. These are cookies. You can have them with a tea on a nice Christmas evening or New Year's. I could name more, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. Bless you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
You sweat a lot, I think. Oh, salut, привет.
And that's Supercharged with Wine, 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 taking us into our wine news. Chong Chong Bo of Amphora is hosting a tasting of indulgent wines for Christmas in the library at Parker's Tavern on the 19th of December at 6 p.m. It costs £38 and includes a tasting of six wines with paired hors d'oeuvres from the Parker's Tavern kitchen.
And Chong Chong Bo has a stock clearance going on at the moment. Now, if you're not on her mailing list, you can contact her via the Amphora website for a list of what's available. There's 10% off six or more bottles and 20% off 12 or more.
King Street Cellars in King Street is offering free mulled wine with every purchase in the run-up to Christmas. And Gutter and Stars has a tasting on the 9th of January from 6.30 to 7.30 in the winery at French's Road, sampling five wines from its range from the 2022, 23 and 24 vintages.
On 10th of January, the Cambridge Wine School has an introduction to wine tasting at the Cambridge Tap. The cost is £35, and at the same venue on the 14th January, a Grand Tour of France with tastings of wine made from Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Grenache and Chenin Blanc, including a wine from a top Bordeaux commune.
The Cambridge Wine Academy has a tour of the New World on the 22nd of January at 7 p.m. and that will be held at Cambridge Wine Merchants in Cherry Hinton Road. The cost is £30.
And this is a good time to find out what local wine and food matching experts will be having at Christmas. And here are Duncan Gammy and Chong Chong Bo.
I think we are going to go for fairly traditional. Last year, I really wanted to try my hand at making a beef Wellington for Christmas. And I did, and I loved it. And I was very, very happy with the results. But it didn't maybe feel as Christmassy as it should have. So I think this year we're going to go back for a classic Christmas turkey. And then for the last couple of years now, I have, for starters, I have cured my own side of salmon, which sounds really fancy. But if I'm honest, a lot of the work is done a couple of days in advance. And it's just very tasty. And I think the benefit is that you end up having quite a lot left for quite a few days. And it's built to last as well. So you can kind of have the most decadent kind of breakfast and smoked salmon sandwiches for a couple of days after Christmas as well.
Ooh, I like to eat oysters. I love oysters. And what better time to eat oysters than at a time of celebration? And it may be a cliche, but one of the best food and wine pairings has got to be oysters and champagne. And I've tried oysters with muscadet, with assyrtiko, with Semillon, with lots of other wines, and nothing comes close to champagne with oysters. So I'll be having oysters, perhaps some lobsters and caviar after that, depending on whether I can get them in time.
Now, most of us cook more than we're going to eat on Christmas Day, and that's partly because we don't want to stint on the big meal, but also because you can use the leftovers to make a quick meal on Boxing Day. Here's Rosie Sykes with some suggestions.
Yeah, well, I recorded this outdoors on Lammers Land, not realising that there's some major works going on, so our lives were in peril. Rosie, for people who have things left over which they haven't eaten for their Christmas Day dinner, have you got any suggestions about how they could use them perhaps on Boxing Day?
Absolutely, Alan. Well, the classic is a pie. That could be anything ranging from, you know, if you've had beef, you could make almost like a cottage pie. If I were you, I'd go with a bit of spice or something, perhaps even a bit Middle Eastern, just to switch it up on Boxing Day. But otherwise, if you've had turkey or ham, a lovely combo is some turkey, some ham, a white sauce of some sort. All your roasted vegetables can go in there, maybe some of your stuffing, a few chestnuts. And then pop a short pastry lid on top, or a puff pastry, or if you've got the wherewithal, suet. We always love suet pastry. You can put some of your gravy in there. It's a great coverall, basically. Christmas all over again.
This sounds very nice. I've never done that.
Yeah, it works well. It works well. It's nice if you've got different people coming on Boxing Day. I've been to people's houses and had a Christmas leftover pie and felt very pleased because their Christmas dinner was very different from mine. But the other thing is a soup. That's a great leftover use up. So you could do a real classic kind of cream of turkey soup, which again is a real catch-all for all your roasted vegetables. Thicken it with the roasted vegetables. Start with some onions and things, and then add in your roasted vegetables, a load of butter, some cream, probably some brandy, and then shred in the meat. And the nicest thing to do with that kind of a soup, I think, is to blend it so it's really smooth and rich. And it kind of is so comforting on Boxing Day and quite nice and easy, really. But I personally am planning, I'm having beef, a Jersey sirloin on Christmas Day, and with my leftovers I'm going to cut it, shred it quite finely, and make a kind of Thai inspired hot kind of, was, it's not really a salad, it's a kind of hot beef that you eat inside a lettuce leaf. So you fry up the beef, and you could add in shredded up leftover roast carrots or parsnips or whatever. And with it, garlic, ginger, chili, and then when it's all nice and fried up, throw in some fish sauce and some rice vinegar, good squeeze of lime juice, and then a lovely handful of chopped herbs, mint, coriander, parsley, whatever you've got. I really would recommend that you always have some coriander about your house. And then have that in lettuce leaves. That's really delicious.
That sounds fantastic.
And the other one that is nice for all leftovers is stuffed cabbage leaves. So if you've bought your sprouts on a stem, like if you're a Morris dancer, on the top there'll be lovely leaves often. If you save those leaves, cut out any really hard stems, give them a couple of minutes in boiling salted water, the leaves, not the stems, and then make a mixture with your stuffing, shred some meat into that, chop up your leftover veg, all sorts of things. Just put a blob inside each leaf, wrap it all up and put it into a buttered dish with the kind of seam at the bottom. And then if you've got gravy left over, I would let it down so it's almost like a thin stock. Season it all very well, put the gravy over so it's just kind of covering the leaves. Dot some butter on top and bake that in the oven. That is absolutely delicious. It kind of goes a little bit crisp on top. And there's all these lovely juices for mopping up with bread. It's really good. And not too much work. I mean, the rolling up is a bit of work. But what I did earlier in the year, I had a fig tree outside the door where I was working, and I'd made these stuffed cabbage leaves, and I just laid fig leaves on top when I was baking it. And the amazing flavour of the fig leaf, which is kind of coconutty, I can't really explain, it's a really amazing flavour, just permeates, and it's lovely. And you don't need to eat the fig leaves, but they add a really lovely flavour.
Right. And so, are baking in the oven for roughly how long?
About 25 minutes.
Right. Yeah, so that sounds good.
That is a nice one, definitely.
Good. Okay, thanks very much, Rosie, and pleasure. I hope you do have a good Christmas.
And you, Alan. Thank you.
Well, there's some fantastic ideas. What do you do with leftovers, Sue?
Well, we always have a goose, and so we always tend to have goose and chestnut risotto. But I might switch it up this year. We'll see.
All right.
Well, here's a very tasty-sounding Christmas dinner. This one is from Alex Rushmer at Vanderlaal, and he is followed by foraging chef Steve Thompson.
Christmas dinner for me is always roast beef. Traditionally, we've always gone for a rib of beef, but this year we're shaking it up ever so slightly. We're going to be having a beef Wellington.
Oh, are you making it yourself? Must be.
I will be making it myself, yeah.
Silly question. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
What is your Christmas treat for yourself going to be?
Lion.
Oh, fair enough.
No, my Christmas treat for myself is a lovely bottle of Beechleaf Noyal we made earlier in the spring. So it was prepared nice and early this year. I've actually got two, actually, to be fair, because we've also got some lovely bottles of Nocino we made as well. And Nocino Manhattans are going to be this Christmas's drink as well, I think. So Nocino is a green walnut liqueur that we made around midsummer, so sort of end of June time, with the green walnuts and vodka. And we simply prick the walnuts and leave them in vodka. And then, yeah, you've got this lovely kind of spiced walnut liqueur, which is just, oh, it's to die for. So we mix that with a little bit of bourbon and a little bit of sweet vermouth.
And there's the familiar music signalling time for news from social media.
Yeah, and there's a fair bit of news from social media, but I'll try and keep it short. Steak and Honour are delighted that Brew Board has popped up over the or down the road from them, and they're collaborating, and you can order your burgers, I think, when you're at Brew Board via a QR code. Grab a pint, sit back, and then the burgers will be delivered to you. That's pretty good, isn't it? Mercado Central are saying that they'll be open up to and including the 23rd of December and then back from the 27th till the 30th, and then close New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Here's an interesting one. Well, they're all interesting. 16th of January, an evening with Bert Blaze. This is at Parker's Tavern, and Bert will be guiding you through unique wines paired with a menu curated by Chef Lee Clark, encouraging you to try new styles, varietals and pairings you might not have considered before. And that's £30 in the library at Parker's Tavern. One more. Gutters and Stars Wine Christmas order cut-off date is the 18th of December. And now we welcome live in the studio Kirsten Horn onto the programme. And Kirsten, in case you didn't know, has started the Gwydir Street Supper Club, which has just had its first meal. So, Kirsten, we're wondering if you could remind us what you cooked and tell us how it went.
Hi, everyone. Well, I started off with blinis with smoked salmon, creme fraiche and pickled cucumber. Also blinis with smoked duck, mushroom, duxelles and pickled red onion. Then we had a lobster bisque and then like a palate cleanser, which was cucumber, lime and absinthe sorbet. And then I made a daub of beef with boulanger potatoes and some sauteed cabbage, followed by a creme caramel and then some chocolates to finish.
Yummy! Wish I'd been there. Wow.
That is ambitious. So did it go okay?
It went really well, yeah. It was
oh,
really,
did it?
Yeah,
there
yeah.
weren't
no, wow. no disasters, no.
Wow. How many were you doing this for?
It was 9 people we had.
Okay, so yeah, you could... Cope.
It's manageable,
yes.
Yeah. I don't want to do more than that, really. But actually, the Indian ones could be, I think, 12.
But that's still a lot of courses and a lot of pre-prep.
I went a bit overboard for the first one. So, yeah, I wanted the first one to be special.
So how does one find out about managing to get onto this? Because it's obviously pretty sought after.
Well, Instagram is my main sort of point of sort of contact. So, yeah, that's where you'd find me. It's gwydir.st.supperclub.
Okay. And how did you feel about it, Kirsten? Because although you can be confident, and you obviously are, about your own cooking ability, you don't know everybody who's coming. Presumably it wasn't all people that you knew.
I knew
and
most
you don't know
of
how
the
they're going to behave.
I knew most of the people for this one, 2 people I didn't know, and 1 person I hadn't seen for 30 years. So it was fine. It was there was a little bit where they were sort of wanting me to chat to them, but once the wine started flowing, everyone just got on with it. You know?
Right, and people were bringing their own wine as well.
It's BYO, so everyone just brought their own wine.
Yeah. You must have needed a lot of space.
We've got quite a large kitchen. Yeah. So we've got, because I like to cook, I've got a lot of surface areas, which is really important in your kitchen, to have good surface area, enough time, places to plate up and put things. And yeah.
And also with your menu, which has got quite varied items on it. The same wine, you know, if you're into wine pairings with food, I'd say that must be quite tricky.
Well, I think most people would just brought some white wine to go with the lobster bisque and then some red wine for the main. They would put dessert wine, but no one actually drank it, so
they'd had enough.
Yeah, I opened my fridge the next day and there was still a bottle of dessert wine. I don't know whose it was, but...
That's nice.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise, yeah. I am thinking, I've got a couple of friends who are wine buyers who may be doing a wine pairing night, but that would be quite expensive, so maybe...
Oh, what? At a supper club? A wine pairing night?
Yeah.
What a fantastic
I don't have a
idea.
License. They'd have to have a license themselves.
But they can use your house to do
it. Yeah, so I do the food and they do the wine pairings, but... As I say, that then would get quite expensive.
But
so
worth it.
Maybe down the line.
Well. Sue, do you fancy doing this sort of thing? You're a very proficient cook.
Yes and no. I mean, I do it for people I know. And I suppose I've, in my Fanny Craddock guise, I've definitely done all sorts of weird and wonderful 1970s things. I might have a go again, because I quite fancy doing another Fanny, but no one's asked me recently, darling.
Oh, well. And, Kirsten, you've been cooking this morning, I saw on Instagram, or at least making mango chutney.
Yeah, mango chutney for the next one, which is Indian night in, I think, the 18th of January.
Right. And are the places still available?
No, that's fully booked, that one.
Is it really?
There's places available for... I'm having a Jamaican... So my mother's Jamaican, and I'm having Jamaican night on the 22nd of February.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so it'd be lots of curry goat and
ackee, rice
brown
and
stew
peas,
chicken,
yeah,
rice and peas.
Nice.
All of that.
Lovely.
Sort of thing.
Right, and has booking opened? Can people contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. Once I've announced it, then it's a free for all. So.
Wow.
And sorry to hog this, but the people who've booked for the second one, are they largely the people who came to the first one?
I have had rebooks, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's new people as well, people who've asked.
So it keeps it fresh for you as well.
Yeah, I don't want it just become the same 10 people coming every time. So.
Yeah.
This might be a bit of a redundant question, Kirsten, but often we've come across people who say things like they enjoy cooking, but once it goes above a certain ceiling, the number of people that they're dealing with, the joy drops away fast. Do you have like a limit on the number of people that you want to have for a supper club?
For the supper club, I don't want to do more than like 12 or 14. So I cater for yoga retreats, and that's generally 20, 25 people with staff. Mm-hmm. And once it gets above that, then it just becomes too much for two people. Then you need more people.
Yes, I fully sympathise. I've done parties for 120 and it's not fun.
It's not. It sucks the joy out of it. No, no.
Not anymore.
Well, thanks very much, Kirsten. That sounds fantastic.
Excellent. I really enjoyed coming in. Thanks so much for having me.
And there's Green Onion signalling the start of our job section. There are vacancies for chef de partie at the Milling Barn in Buntingford and at Queen's College, Cambridge.
Pembroke College wants a sous chef and Gonville and Keys a junior sous chef.
A part-time chef is needed at Bohemian St Neots, a senior brunch chef and a head chef is needed at Hot Numbers in Shepworth, and a head brunch chef at Hot Numbers in Gwydir Street, and Cam's Cuisine wants a roaming chef.
Commie chefs are needed at the Crown and Punch Bowl in Horningsea and at the Astronomer in Cambridge.
And if you're interested in any of these jobs, we suggest popping in at a quiet time for a chat or checking out the organisation's website for more information.
And that takes us to the end of the programme for today. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m, and we're also available as a podcast from all the usual places. So, coming up next on Cambridge Radio is the Cambridge Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Malazzo at 4, and then at 6 it's the Women's Sports Mix with Alex Elbro and Amy Gray.
And we're off for a Christmas break now, but we'll be back on the 11th of January with a look back at what happened in 2024. Until then, goodbye and
Happy Christmas!
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas.